Welcome to Pre-K Spot Talks. I am Melissa, your host and the founder of Pre-K Spot, the spot for early childhood educators to open up their teaching. I am your guide down the open-ended child-led teaching path, and together we will explore strategies and ideas so that you may open up your teaching to less stress, more engagement, and an overall joyful child-led classroom. Hey, hey, educator friends, and welcome back to another episode of Pre-K Spot Talks. I'm your host, Melissa May, and this is Season 6, Episode 3, all about how play belongs everywhere, especially in your public school classroom. Today, we embark on an adventure exploring how play, a vibrant tapestry of learning, belongs not just in our homes and playgrounds, but in the very heart of our public education system. Let's start with a story. Picture a young child, eyes alight with wonder, as she builds a towering castle from blocks. In her mind, it's not just blocks. It's a fortress, a story, a dream. This simple act of play is her language, her way of understanding the world. This, my dear listeners, is where learning begins, in the joyful, unstructured, and imaginative world of play. Now, what exactly do we mean by play? We have talked about this often, and I'm pretty sure everybody knows where we stand, but just in case you're new here, let's define it. In the realm of early childhood education, play is more than just fun and games. It's an intricate dance of learning, a process where young minds explore, create, and discover. Through play, children learn to solve problems, express themselves, and understand their ever-expanding world. It's not just about the toys they use or the materials they use. It's about the stories they create and the lessons they learn. We all know that I love to use Peter Gray's definition of play. So let's just talk about that really quick. According to Peter Gray, there are 5 key components to defining play. Play is self-chosen and self-directed. Play is intrinsically motivated. The means are more valued than the ends. It's about the process. Play is guided by mental rules, but the rules leave room for creativity. Play is imaginative, and play is conducted in an alert, active, but relatively non-stressed frame of mind. Now, these exact words come from the definitions of play by Peter Gray on the website voiceofplay.org. Now, when we are following those, this is what we are always aiming for. Of course, I completely understand, teaching in a public classroom myself, that we may not be able to touch on every single one of those as deeply as we would like to when we are offering play to our children. And I will always say, a little bit of play or even playful activities are better than absolutely nothing. But we don't want to settle on those. We always want to be aiming for these 5 qualifiers to define play. The value of play is not just anecdotal. It's grounded in solid research. Studies show that play enhances cognitive development, boosts emotional strength, and fosters social skills. It's like a magical elixir for growth, preparing children not just for academic success, but for life itself. Dr. Emma Hughes, a renowned child psychologist, states, "Play is the language of childhood. Through it, children develop the skills necessary to navigate complex social landscapes and engage in creative problem solving." So let's tell another story. I actually just had a very, very recent conversation with my para as we were observing the children in their play because we had a day where our schedule changed and we had even more time for play than we do in the day. The children got a full almost 2 hours of straight play, and it was fabulous. We were observing a specific child, as this child is one of our youngest children. He is a fall birthday, a late fall birthday, and he's actually very close in age to my own child. And I was watching the way that he was navigating a play situation with friends. He was very regulated. He used his voice. He stood his ground. And they problem solved together. They talked about it through communication and said, no, this is my idea. And it was really lovely to see all of that happen. But I will say that this child cannot yet write his name. He is only just recently recognizing his name. And of course, that is all completely age appropriate. But it really got me thinking because this child also attended a more open-ended, Reggio-style, nature-based school before this. And it really just proved to me what I am always saying to parents here is that this child has the base skills socially and emotionally and all of the things he needs to access all of his next learning. And that's what we're working on in pre-K. He totally knows how to coexist in a group. He knows how to try to problem solve. He knows all of these things. He's very intelligent, social, emotionally wise. And I think that is due to all of the experiences that he has had so far. And even though academically, he might not be where some of the other students are, it doesn't matter because he's able to access everything. And it just, he has such a great foundation. And it just was really striking in those moments because he was also working with children who are super high academically but have not yet had those types of social emotional experiences as this is the first time that they are in a group setting. So it was really interesting to see the dynamic and the juxtaposition of the two differences of either end of the spectrum. And children will learn everything they need to learn academically when they are ready. And until then, the best that we can do is offer them these really foundational skills socially and emotionally to regulate so that they don't get frustrated and to problem solve and negotiate and build their brains as brain architects to lay that foundation. So you may be wondering why we're advocating for play in public schools. Or maybe you're not wondering because it's obvious why we do need to advocate for it. I mean, isn't play part of childhood all the time? But it's not in schools most often. It is not the main way of teaching in schools. So here's where the plot thickens a little. Despite its proven benefits, play often finds itself on the sidelines in our education system. In many public schools, structured lessons and standardized tests take center stage, while play awaits in the wings. But it's time for a change. It's time for play to take its rightful place in the spotlight of our classrooms. And I feel like it's slowly creeping its way in. So this is a really great way to be a change maker without really rocking the boat. And with that thought, we'll soon step into the next segment where we'll unravel the traditional factory model of education and explore why it's high time for play to break down those walls. But first, let's pause for a moment to appreciate the joy, the creativity, and the sheer wonder that play brings into our lives and the lives of our children. Imagine, if you will, a conveyor belt. Along this belt, each child is viewed as a product to be molded and measured against a standard. This is the essence of the factory model of education. A system born during the Industrial Revolution designed to produce uniformity and efficiency. In this model, there's little room for the whimsical meanderings of play. Here, education is a structured, one-size-fits-all process focused primarily on rote memorization and standardized testing. But we all know that children are not factory products. They are vibrant beings, each with their own unique spark. Just as a gardener nurtures different plants in different ways, educators must cultivate each child's learning journey individually. This is where the factory model falters and where play-based learning shines. Play is the water and sunlight for young minds, allowing them to grow in their own time and in their own way. I don't know if many schools that I know of nowadays, especially here in New York City, are really to that far extreme anymore. They're definitely understanding that children are individuals and there's lots of different ways to handle learners. It's just really mostly about mindset and expectations. The factory model's focus on standardized testing and structured curriculum can stifle creativity and individual potential. In contrast, play-based learning is like a canvas of possibilities, where each stroke of play adds color and depth to a child's development. Dr. Susan Lin, a noted advocate for child-centered education, says play allows children to use their creativity while developing their imagination, physical, cognitive, and emotional strength, basically touching on all of the developmental domains. And all at the same time, not planning separate lessons for each one. The shift from the factory model to play-based approach isn't just whimsical dreaming. It's a transformation backed by research and successful implementations worldwide. For instance, the Scandinavian education system, renowned for its emphasis on play and exploration, consistently ranks high in both happiness and academic achievement. These countries view play not as a break from learning, but as the very essence of learning, which is something we all know that I believe in deep down. The contrast between the two models is stark. It's way stark. On one side, we have the rigidity of the factory model, where learning is a linear, predictable process. On the other side, we have the fluidity of play-based learning, where education is an organic, ever-changing journey. One model prepares children for a world that no longer exists, while the other equips them for the future that is constantly evolving. It's important to note that advocating for play in education doesn't mean abandoning structure or assessment. Instead, it's about finding a harmonious balance where play informs the structure and where assessment acknowledges the diverse talents of each child. This is where I did an entire previous podcast episode on the 90-10 rule. This is where the balance of teacher-led to child-led or play to traditional really comes into play. So let's envision a world where the walls of the factory model are replaced with open playgrounds of learning. A world where education is not just about filling a bucket, but about lighting a fire. We're going to move on to explore the barriers that have kept play out of many public schools and how we can overcome them to bring this vision to life. We're only going to touch on them a little bit because I have an entire episode about play barriers coming up later in this season, but this is definitely information that needs to be heard more than once because these are the things that we need to break down to really dive deep into play. Now, we've explored the power of play and dissected the outdated factory model. Now, let's navigate the labyrinth of barriers that often keep play from enriching our public schools and discuss how we can overcome them. Imagine play as a bright, blossoming flower in the garden of education. Yet, this flower often struggles to bloom amidst the weeds of constraints and challenges. One of the most formidable barriers is the pervasive belief in a rigid curriculum. Many educators, policymakers are tethered to traditional methods. This is the way a lot of us are being taught. It's the way I was taught. And some of this, not all of it, but some of it does go back to teacher prep programs. They believe that the structured learning and constant assessment are the only ways to ensure academic success. This belief system creates an environment where play is seen as frivolous, a luxury rather than a necessity. So really, mindset, people. Another significant barrier is budget constraints. In the world of ever-tightening school budgets, priorities often lean towards quantifiable resources. Textbooks, technology, standardized tests. Play, which requires a different kind of investment, time, space, and a shift in perspective, often falls by the wayside in budget discussions. It might require more materials than a school has. But as we've talked in other ways or in other episodes, there are plenty of ways of getting free materials for play, but that in itself is an entirely other conversation. Then there's the hurdle of standardized testing. With so much emphasis on test scores as a measure of success, schools feel compelled to prioritize test preparation over play-based learning. This is clearly, obviously, for upper grades, not so much in pre-K, but it adds to the push down, which truly affects pre-K. This focus shifts the educational landscape away from creativity and exploration towards memorization and repetition. Despite all of these challenges, there are schools and educators who have successfully integrated play into their curriculum, like me, like our school. They serve as beacons of hope and exemplars of what is possible. For instance, some schools have adopted a balanced approach where play is woven into the curriculum, not as a separate entity, but as a vital component of learning. These schools often see improvements not just in academic performance, but in student well-being and engagement. So, how do we navigate these barriers? It starts with education and advocacy. We need to educate stakeholders, teachers, parents, administrators, and policymakers about the immense value of play. This education can take the form of workshops, seminars, and even inviting experts to speak on the transformative power of play in learning. Advocacy plays a crucial role as well. It's really about raising our voices and sharing research and showcasing success stories. Really one of the reasons why I started doing what I do. I really just want to spread the play-based love. It's about creating a dialogue that challenges the status quo and opens up new possibilities. Parents and educators can form alliances, advocating for play-based learning initiatives and lobbying for policies that support such approaches. Funding is another key factor. Creative solutions like partnering with local businesses or applying for educational grants can provide the resources needed to integrate play into a curriculum. Community involvement, including volunteer programs and local sponsorships, things like that, can also bolster efforts to bring play into our schools. And really, let's not forget teacher training. Educators need to be equipped with the skills and knowledge to implement play-based learning effectively. This involves professional development programs that focus on theory and practice in play in education. These used to be really, really hard to find. They are starting to crop up and pop up everywhere. And another reason why I started doing what I do. I have a new coaching program out there where I can support you in every which way you need to implement play into your space. Now, it might be finding research for admin or parents and things like that, or just coming up with ideas or finding space and time in your schedule. And the best part about this coaching is it's coaching, but it's really just support, and you get me daily. We're not going to try to figure out a Zoom time and squeeze everything in 30 minutes that's going to cost you $150 for 30 minutes. No, it's going to cost you less than that for an entire month of being able to text, voice, audio, video, anytime you want, and I will respond to you daily. You definitely want to check that out. The link is in the show notes. If you are really looking for some more play support to either start new and fresh and add play to your classroom or level up the play that you already do. So let's remember that the barriers to play in public schools are not insurmountable. They are challenges that call for creativity, collaboration, and courage. Really, a lot of it is just showing everybody that you are doing the same things just in a different way. You are meeting all the goals, you are teaching all the things, but it just might not look exactly the way it used to look. So let's move on to how we can actually make this happen. We talked about the barriers. Let's talk about the how-tos, the actions we can take. Advocacy for play begins with a passion and a belief in its fundamental role in education. It's about being a voice that articulates the importance of play not just as an activity, but as a vital educational tool. Advocacy means speaking up in PTA meetings, writing to school boards, and engaging in dialogues with educators and policymakers. It's about being the gentle yet persistent wind that sways in the branches of decision-making towards embracing play. This means you have to be all in. You have to have the mindset, and you have to believe in it. Even if you don't think you know everything about play or don't even have a ton of experience, that doesn't really matter. As long as you have the belief in it and you stand by it, then you can advocate for it, because then you're just going to learn more. The more you try, the more you share about it, the more you research about it. The journey of advocacy also involves building a community. It's about connecting with like-minded parents, educators, and experts from a collective voice. This community becomes a powerhouse of ideas, support, and action. Together, you can organize play-focused events, workshops, campaigns that highlight the benefits of play in learning. Showcasing the success stories and research in these forums can be a persuasive tool in shifting perspectives. And again, that is why I started PreKSpot. We are starting to build community. We have the Read to Play Book Club community, which is ready to grow and flourish. I have an upcoming membership where we're going to build even more community. And I have so many other opportunities that are coming to you that are just really going to do exactly this, because this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to advocate for play, and we're trying to spread the play-based love, but it's not going to be just me. I need you too. One of the most practical steps in advocating for play is to start small. It could be as simple as setting up a play corner in your child's classroom or organizing a play-based learning day. These small initiatives can serve as a model demonstrating the positive impact of play on children's learning and well-being. As these small ripples spread, they can gradually lead to a wave of changes across a school and eventually a district. If you are fresh to this, I definitely suggest trying to start small. It's kind of like quitting smoking. You don't go cold turkey. Sometimes that works for people, but likely it's going to be gradual and a little bit at a time. And again, I'm here to support you. The PreKSpot community is here to support you. We are here for it. There are lots of ideas that come down from other educators in the comments on Instagram and things like that. So if you are not already there, definitely hop on over there. Incorporating play doesn't mean an overhaul of an entire curriculum. It's about integrating play into existing structures. This is another great place to start. Again, not going to go cold turkey. You are going to work with what you have. This can be done by allowing time for unstructured play within the school day or using play-based techniques to teach core subjects. For example, a math lesson can be a game that teaches basic arithmetic, or science class can include an experiment that encourages exploration and inquiry. Really, one of the best ways to start is to swap anything that involves a worksheet into a hands-on learning experience. Funding, as we discussed earlier, is a crucial aspect. Advocating for budget allocations for play materials and space is essential. This might involve presenting proposals to school boards, highlighting the long-term benefits of play in education. Additionally, exploring grants and partnerships with local businesses or educational organizations can provide the necessary financial support. Honestly, a lot of the materials that I have and I use, especially my loose parts, I have gotten for free. With a little bit of research about locations who give away things or just going to Goodwill where things are super cheap, you can fund your classroom, or you can fill your classroom with amazing open-ended materials. Teacher training is another key area. Advocating for professional development opportunities that focus on play-based learning can empower teachers to implement these strategies effectively. This training should provide teachers with the tools and their confidence to integrate play into their teaching methods. I do know for a fact that many more teacher prep programs, especially graduate level programs, are teaching more into play. However, I do know that a lot of teachers are entering in with zero play experience. I have been talking to my own para right now who is in some classes and talking to people who don't even know what play is. And even her herself used to question things like we used to do. She would question what I'm doing or my teacher bestie Mikey was doing and just didn't quite understand. And that's totally okay. But now that she's learning more, she sees it. So it is really just about showing people, making the learning known. So let's remember that advocating for play in education is a journey of passion and persistence. It's a path that requires us to be educators, storytellers, and sometimes revolutionaries. We must be the voice for our children, advocating for a system that respects and nurtures their natural way of learning. As we conclude this episode, I invite you to take a moment and reflect on the role you can play in this moment. Whether you're a parent, an educator, or someone who believes in the power of play, your voice matters. Let's join hands and hearts to create learning spaces where play is not just allowed but encouraged, where the joy of discovery is celebrated, and where every child's potential is nurtured through the timeless power of play. So thank you for being a part of this conversation and listening to this episode. Together, let's continue to advocate, inspire, and transform education. This is Melissa May from Pre-K Spot Talks. That's it for this episode. We'll see you in the next one. And until then, play on.